You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, joined in the dog bowl by Andrew Gribble. You can follow him on Twitter at Andrew_Gribble. He is the Browns senior staff writer at ClevelandBrowns.com. Andrew, you were in the room yesterday with Jimmy Haslam. What was your takeaway from the owner?
Well, you know, I think in a situation like this, whenever there's kind of swirling stuff going on outside the building that you want to address, I think anytime you get a guy that like Jimmy, who is very good in dealing with reporters, good with dealing with media, it's good to get a voice out there. It's good to eat. You don't want to get defensive with every single negative story or negative kind of circumstances that come to light. But I think this was a particular one that you know, he felt strong about because he strongly defended the fact that there is not the perceived dysfunction in this building. And I think he said it as many ways as possible. But he understands why the questions keep on coming, because over and over again, he acknowledged he knows he's not going to win over every reporter, every fan until the Browns start consistently winning. And he freely acknowledged that over and over again, saying it's not hunky-dory because we're not winning. But the people in place right now in the building are focused and committed on that and ready to move forward.
I like when he said hunky-dory.
Yeah, that was repeating a reporter's question. He kind of just kind of went with it, and I think it was a good soundbite from that segment, and it kind of reiterated. It kind of came at a good time because you don't want to put out perception everyone's perfectly happy going 7-9. You want to come out and say, you know, we're working together, we're working well together, but we also realize that 7-9, it can be a lot better.
I think that's the key, right? He's saying, listen, there isn't the dysfunction that is being reported, but don't take that to mean that we're content. We're not content.
Right. And I think that's what Pettine said over and over again near the end of the season. They clearly didn't want to end the 2014 season with 5 straight losses. But it's one of those things where if you would have said ahead of the season, hey, you're going to go 7-9 this year, I think a lot of people would have been happy. But there's different kinds of 7-9, and I don't think a lot of people feel good about that this past 7-9. But when you take a step back, it was a big step forward. So it's just kind of getting those people together, realizing how it can be better and how you can maybe – even if the record doesn't improve dramatically next year, how you can feel better at the end of next season than you did this past season.
Andrew, do you think that, again, now that he's appeased a lot of people and coming out and facing the music centered around the dysfunction here in Cleveland, that a very exciting time in the NFL Combine and the draft, you know, soon thereafter, you know, a couple months from now, is kind of allows him to step back into the shadows, take on his role, let Ray and his staff then take over and really evaluate talent, give their reports, and of course, you writing it, Nathan and I talking about it on the radio, get Browns fans excited about the future here in Cleveland and not focus on the dysfunction anymore.
Yeah, I do think so, and especially if those Browns fans pay attention to what's being written locally, because I think that once next week happens, Coach Pettine and Ray Farmer will have to address national media, and I think that because national media was not in that room yesterday, this stuff's probably going to come up again. I don't think there's any way to completely avoid it. I think getting out in front of it helped. But I think local wise, I would think the focus is going to then turn toward what the Browns do with these 10 draft picks. You know, this is a big draft. And I think Jimmy Haslam acknowledged that many times yesterday. This is a very important draft, just like last year's was. But having 10 picks, being the only team with 2 first-round picks, you can do some significant work. And like we saw last year, even when your first-rounders don't pan out as expected in year one, you can get some quality impact players.
Absolutely.
throughout the rest of your draft. And those guys are going to have an impact this year, and then you can have maybe some of those younger guys who didn't make as much of an impact last year kind of step into a bigger role this
season. Do
you think
positively using those 10 picks in the draft and maybe strategically using them, whether we trade some away, we move up, we move down, but coming away with a solid national consensus on how the Cleveland Browns drafted would be the best way to take a positive step, again, from facing the music all offseason up to this point, that is the one thing that everyone will start to hang their hat on as we move forward into more football news to deviate from the stuff that happens, you know, here in Berea and off the field?
Yeah, and I think, you know, having a good draft right away, it's kind of an impossible thing. We always do grades right after the draft because that's what we're supposed to do. We have to talk about it and everything like that. It's kind of hard. If you're going to use all 10 picks this year, it's kind of hard to have a bad draft the next day. I think people are going to be excited about what happens with those 10 picks right away. And I think, as we know, it's a really great draft. It takes a couple years. And I think that's why, as you mentioned earlier, that Mel Kiper regrade of that draft, I think it surprised some people who just focus on the first round guys,
right,
and don't realize maybe the body of work of the later round guys. Because, you know, Chris Kirksey, we know him around here. He had a very good season. Nationally, not as big of a name, but we know here that he's probably a solid starter for years to come, and that's some great value in the third round to get a guy. Because, you know, half the third round, half those guys are out of the league after a couple of years, and, you know, we can safely say that Chris Kirksey's not going to be a guy that's out of the league.
Right, Kirksey's not. Dazier's not. Terrence West isn't. And Betonio looks like the real deal. Certainly would have been drafted in the first round if they redid that draft. I don't think there's any question about that. So, going into this one, you said it is an important draft. Ray Farmer and his team, they have done a good job there. With those first-round picks, we were talking about a lot yesterday. What direction do you see the Browns going? To you, is it imperative that they get one receiver, somebody on the D-line? It seems like every mock draft has them going D-line and receiver, and usually receiver, then D-line.
Yeah, you know, I don't know what order you go in there. I think there's clearly three or four positions that obviously jump out to us a little bit. You don't see the Browns going into this draft and taking a safety or taking a cornerback in the first round. I think like a wide receiver, defensive line, maybe a pass rusher, and maybe even offensive lineman. I think those are the four positions that have kind of, the consensus is those are maybe the positions you go early. You know, my opinion is you look at the free agent market and you look at the depth at the position in those drafts, I think it maybe is easier to help fill your needs at wide receiver in later rounds in the draft and through free agent. We've looked at the free agent list. It's pretty loaded with wide receivers.
Sure.
We've looked at the draft class. There's about 20, 25 guys who are kind of in that first through fourth round range. With defensive tackle, defensive end, there's only a certain amount of 325-pound guys that can play football well. You know, I think there's almost maybe a finite amount of those guys, and that's why you see defensive tackles, even if they've maybe struggled throughout their college career, they end up going in the top half of the first round, because finding those guys is so important to your defense. So, you know, I think defensive line, wide receiver, offensive line, pass rusher, it's a toss-up. And it really, that's when it comes down to your board, because, you know, you're not picking in those first five picks. Once you get to that, like, number eight, number nine, things can start going in directions that you didn't anticipate, and that's when you have to follow your board and the rankings and trust in them.
I'm going to throw this question out there to both of you guys, because I actually was just on, I believe it was NFL.com, with Mike Mayock, looking through his wide receiver. I'm banking on the fact that we're going to go fill that void and get some talent there at wide receivers. He's got Kevin White listed number one as a top prospect, Amari Cooper number two. Do you guys think that through Ray Farmer and his staff's evaluation, going to the combine, who runs the fastest speed and those types of things, that there's an opportunity for us to fall in love with a guy, you know, whether it be Parker, White, or even Cooper, if he essentially drops to us at 12, or we move up maybe to, you know, 8 or 9 to get him in front of someone else who may need a wide receiver? Do you think it's going to be us falling in love with one of those guys as opposed to taking, you know, whoever's left and making the move to go get it, the similar to the way we did with Justin Gilbert?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I would be stunned if Amari Cooper fell to number 12, unless he had just like an atrocious combine, which, you know, in covering Amari Cooper for 2 years, I couldn't imagine that happening. That's that kind of news to me.
There's a lot of teams out there that, though, they don't necessarily need a wide receiver that are going to draft in
White's
front of
the Cleveland Browns. White's been rising, and there's a growing group that thinks he's the number one receiver in the class. Most people still think Cooper's the number one receiver in that class.
Yeah, you know, so maybe after the Senior Bowl, you know, before the Senior Bowl, like, for example, we thought Danny Shelton might be the guy that could be in range for the Browns, and then he has a good Senior Bowl, and all of a sudden him in the top 8,
same thing will happen
10.
In combine.
Yeah, you know, you're going to have those kind of combine superstars, Senior Bowl superstars, but eventually it kind of that momentum kind of goes away, and then I think you kind of fall to your board. It's tough. You don't want to probably get too emotional in the draft. You kind of have to, again, go by your board, and because, you know, you could fall in love with a player, but then so if you're falling in love with the player, there's
so
probably a lot
else.
Of other teams
yeah.
that are too. So, you know, I think it's just you have to trust your evaluations, and I think that's why it's been important. And Ray Farmer said this in December. You know, he's gotten his scouts in, guys that he feels comfortable working with that, you know, maybe he didn't have in place last year. So maybe when he puts together that board, there's even more confidence in knowing that he had the right guys evaluating this player's going into it.
And it also could come down to a situation where you kind of have a tier. You can say to yourself, in this bucket, if we got Cooper White or Devontae Parker, we're fine with that, and as opposed to necessarily falling in love. And it seems most evaluators have those three in one bucket. Dorial Green-Beckham likely would have been the number one receiver in this draft if it weren't, he comes with all kinds of baggage. Yeah. I can't imagine the Browns bringing in a receiver with that kind of baggage.
He's a phenomenal wide receiver, but it's just so much went wrong there.
I mean, and you've already had Josh Gordon.
The number one high school recruit. I mean, his recruitment was as chronicled as anyone I've ever seen, and it just – but when you saw that guy play, you knew he could play. And if he figures it out and gets things cleaned up, he can be a star. But again – that there's just so many red flags there.
He could be like a Randy Moss. I mean,
We've got that same problem here, and that's why I think you know
we're not dipping our feet in that pool.
That was a 10-foot pole.
He will go. A lot of people think he might go to Kansas City. Has been a rumored destination.
Opposite Dwayne Bowe
for Dorial Greenback. Yeah, probably replacing him.
That's near his hometown, and you know maybe he can catch a touchdown for them. That would be big.
Think about how amazing that is. Think about what the odds would have been in Las Vegas at the beginning of the season. The Kansas City Chiefs would have gone the entire year without throwing a touchdown to a wide receiver. In today's NFL.
500 to 1?
I think it would be way higher.
What odds would entice you to bet on a team doing that again this year?
I'd say 500 to 1. Yeah. I'd put a dollar bet
500
down.
500 to 1's like, that's like a what? Is that 500 to 1's like...
That's
an 8-point underdog in the NFL is 500 to 1. 9-point underdog would be a plus 500.
Okay, so yeah, probably 2,000 to 1.
Maybe it'd be higher than that. Maybe it's a 10 or whatever. But I'm just saying we're talking about something unbelievably rare. I don't think they could put odds in it because it probably is like a 1 in a million thing.
Yeah, true.
I mean,
it's just
so you're telling me there's a chance.
Yes,
this is a team that was a playoff contender until the last week of the season. I think that makes it even more amazing that this team, and it's not like they like really struggled passing the ball. They moved it down the field. Alex Smith was, you know, he's in the middle just like he kind of always has been. And then, you know, they had a good running game and they had Kels. I mean, that really moved
the ball.
I loved
him. Yeah. Very interesting. I'm trying to quickly while we do this Google the last time that happened prior to the Chiefs. Do you know? You might know.
I have no idea, but it probably happened in the
like
a different
70s,
era of
right,
football.
Different era of football.
You know, everyone's airing it out now. That's just crazy.
It's just unfathomable. Andrew, great stuff. What's going on right now at ClevelandBrowns.com? Because I got to tell you, folks, if you're not on ClevelandBrowns.com reading the great work of Andrew Gribble and Kevin Jones, you're missing out. These guys are prolific and they are cranking out content. I know you had some summaries of Jimmy Haslam yesterday. What else do you have going on?
Yeah, we're just unpacking kind of everything that kind of came out yesterday with Jimmy Haslam. And then, you know, our focus has completely shifted going into this weekend and going into the next week. It's all combine all the time. I think this is you want to say the Senior Bowl is maybe the official kickoff to the offseason, but I think this is the big event. I mean, you've got every coach and GM there, most of whom are talking to the reporters. So you've got a ton of different stories coming out. And then, you know, you've got every legitimate college process.
All the great underclassmen.
All the big names
are
going to be doing 10 to 15 minute press conferences. Jameis Winston's going to be talking.
Yes.
Mariota. Just every name you could think of is there and talking to hundreds of reporters. It's a great event.
All right. The last time a team went an entire season without a wide receiver touchdown catch, I'll give you guys any guesses.
77.
69.
1964, the Giants. Ooh. That is how long it has been. I mean, that is amazing. And this is the most pass-heavy era in NFL history.
And they came so close. I think that there was one that was taken away in that last game. They had it, and then just fate intervened.
Don't you think they would have tried to force it? I mean, couldn't you have just gotten in near the goal line and just thrown fade after fade or just run 800 blatant pick plays and just try to get a receiver touchdown?
The thing is, not many people can name many Kansas City wide receivers. Yeah, Dwayne Bowe and then
– Dwayne Bowe. Well, Donnie Avery. Junior Hemingway.
Just not a big name, not a position that's been prioritized.
They've tried. They've drafted Jonathan Ball. They've drafted people. It just hasn't worked out for them at all. Andrew, great stuff. Appreciate the time as always.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right, follow him at Andrew_Gribble and check out his great work at ClevelandBrowns.com. When we come back, let's get back to your comments. 216-578-0850. Talking, of course, about what happened. What about Josh McCown? Is Josh McCown an option to you, Browns fans? Is that a quarterback you would be interested in having him come out? And a lot of people say he was done dirty by the situation that he fell into there in Tampa. I find it hard to believe when you've got Mike Evans and Vincent Jackson that you could ever be – somebody could say you fell into a bad situation as a quarterback. But would you take a shot on Josh McCown? Was he somebody you'd prioritize for the Cleveland Browns in free agency? Let us know. 216-578-0850. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, ESPN 850 WKNR. Serving a new Maserati. In a brand new Maserati. That's a whole lot of new money. Session that had it for 12.